We are all one. We are all one living organism. It is a very incredibly beautiful spiritual organism we call the world. It is not just a physical organism, it is a spiritual organism. And it has, like you have a spiritual light, it has a spiritual light. Now, when you stop thinking it is about you and your spiritual development and your spiritual path, and you step into the oneness that is at the core, the cornerstone of every mystical path, every mystical path, every spiritual path, as far as I know, believes in oneness. Everything is one. We are one living organism. We are one with God, however you like to call it. And so this light that we have is not our light. Because the moment you have really deep spiritual realizations, there is no you anyway. You go. There is just that, or the other, or God, or the beloved, or you dissolve completely. There is nothing there. There is, wheresoever you turn, there is the face of God. It is all that. It is all God. So this light that we think we have, of course, is not our light. It belongs to the whole. But we have a responsibility for it. We have a responsibility then for the spiritual well-being of the planet. It's very simple. Because the world is dying. Anybody who has any ecological awareness, the world is dying ecologically. Now, what every spiritual teaching says is that what happens in the outer planes first happens in the inner planes. The outer plane is a reflection of the inner plane. What matters is the inner plane. So this means that the world is dying spiritually. This means that the light is going out of the world. Now, I can just tell you, because I have been given the responsibility to work with human beings and their light, every human being has a certain spiritual light. They bring it into the world when they are born. It is the light of the self. It gets covered over. It becomes just like an ember until they meet a teacher or a path that blows on that ember and the light becomes a fire. If they're lucky, burns them up. But if that light goes out in the human being, then there is no possibility for spiritual transformation for them in this life, in that lifetime. It is over. Unless you are, I guess, an amazing teacher that can recreate the spiritual light of a human being. That light that's gone means the spiritual evolution of that human being is over for that life. It is a spiritual fact. Which is why, as a teacher, you have to make sure that those who you are working with, their light continues to burn, they look after it, they don't do things that might interfere with it. Now, the world is dying ecologically, which is a reflection of the fact the world is dying spiritually, because we have lost connection with the sacredness of life. And the light is going out. It is one of the most spiritually distressing things to see. Now, there's a crucial moment, as I say, when a human being, when the light goes, nothing can happen. There is a moment before the danger zone happens, when the soul cries out, because the soul knows what will happen if it loses that light. It cries out to God. It is the cry of the soul. Yari! It is like the deep, most primal cry in creation. The despair of the soul. If the light goes, this life is over spiritually. I cannot find my way. I will be lost. There is no way home. Now we are at this moment of time hearing for the first time for millennia the cry of the soul of the world. It would send a certain chill down your spine because it is a world about to die. Spiritually. It is dying ecologically. And it is about to die spiritually. We don't know what would happen if it does. We have no memory in our collective consciousness. Because we've even forgotten the world has a soul. We're brought up to believe the world is some physical thing. You can treat as you like. You can rape as much as you want. You can do whatever you like. The fact that it has a soul, and the soul might cry, and that we might have to listen to the cry of the soul of the world. And this prayer of the world might be our prayer because we are one with the world. That, friends, is real spiritual responsibility. That is the tremendous importance of contemplative life at this time because we have access to grace. Not for ourselves, because we don't matter. We are, in the Sufi tradition, you become less than the dust at the feet of your teacher. We are blown hither and thither. I like this expression of Hildegard von Bingen. She is a feather on the breath of God. Beautiful. You can meditate on that saying for years. It's so deep. It's so beautiful. But this is the prayer of the world. We know our own prayers. I'm sure each of you has at some time in your life been at that moment of crisis in yourself, in your outer life, in your inner life, in your spiritual practice, when the darkness has come and the despair has come and the chaos has come and you doubt your teacher and you doubt the path and something in you cries. This is this moment of despair. St. John of the Cross called it the dark night of the soul when it goes really to an extreme. It is kind of the hallmark of real spiritual life. You've all experienced it at some moment. And then you cry. You cry. This deep cry of the human being, of the creation to the creator, of the soul to God. And how often grace comes. How often in that moment of despair, some miracle happens, either in your heart, suddenly love is present, suddenly peace is present, or in your outer life, suddenly an impossible situation changes. We all know that. This moment of grace, the doors open, the grace comes. Otherwise we would be lost. And there is exactly what happens to an individual is also can happen to the world. If we are present, if we are prepared to acknowledge that our practice is part of the world's practice. There is no difference. How can there be a difference? It is one. It is life. It is God. There is no difference. We are brought up, of course, to believe we are separate individuals and we find the path and the path takes us home until suddenly you realize that is all a complete illusion. It is all one. It is all God. It is all this extraordinary, beautiful thing we call the world that we have treated so badly on so many levels. And then what is your practice for at this time? And how can we acknowledge that dimension of spiritual practice and hear the cry of the world's soul, hear this prayer of the world, don't desert me, I am dying, save me. And then really begin to acknowledge the potency of our contemplative practice, which is to keep open a gate of grace within our heart, within our soul, between the creator and the creation, between the primal cause and the world of multiplicity, between the formless and the world of forms. Then we take our spiritual practice in both hands as mature and responsible adults. Then, of course, it is up to the will of God. It is up to the deeper forces and the destiny of this planet, which we have very little understanding of. But at least we say yes somewhere then. We keep open the gates of grace. Our prayer is the prayer of the world because we are one with the world. We are one with life. We are not other than life. This is the great myth that has been sold to us by rationalism. We are separate from life. We are separate from the world. It is ridiculous. Any indigenous person would kind of laugh out loud. How can you be separate from life? Which means our spiritual practice belongs to life. Our contemplative practice is a cornerstone of the world. And then grace can come. We are so caught up with doing. We always want to do, 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 do. I always say we have done enough doings, you know? We have done enough damage. Let's just stop with the doings. And let's learn to be. Because I was always taught that contemplative life, spiritual life, mystical life, is a state of being. It is not something you do, it's something you are. And this, is, of course, has to do with being receptive, being empty, to do listening, to do with waiting, to do with all of those feminine qualities that belong to the soul, because, as you all know, the soul is feminine before God. The soul is a state of divine receptivity. The soul is a state of prayer towards God. Actually, everything in creation is in a state of prayer to God. We have forgotten it. We have forgotten so much, but because all of us here have been called to contemplative life, have been called to look inward, have been called to look away from the conflicts and the chaos and the darkness, yes, be honest, the darkness that is in the outer world, to try to find something else within our souls, within our hearts. And if we live that and are present within that, then if it is His will, something can be reborn again. Something can come alive, not just within our own hearts, but within the world, because it is one. And then the world can start to sing again. I often think we have forgotten the world could sing. It is, of course, part of the Aboriginal, Australian Aboriginal culture. They called it Dreamtime, the song lines of creation. The world sings. You can follow the song lines through the world. We have forgotten that. But then the world can come alive again, and the world can start to sing, and then joy will return, and then flowers will bloom in unexpected ways, and magic will happen, and the world will come alive as it should be, not repressed by all of these thoughts and ideas and that are killing the world. So this is just a plea, a cry. It is the cry of the world, the cry of the world's soul, that within your hearts there is a place that belongs just to God, and that is infinitely precious, not just for yourself, but for the whole world. We can be present within our own hearts, within the light of our own hearts, within the prayer of our own soul, to keep open the gates of grace so that a promise can be given back, so that this cry of the world, this prayer of the world, can be answered through our hearts, as well as in many other ways.